Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's your girl, Lauren Williams, one of the consultants at Student Loan Planner, and I am joined by Megan McGuire.
I know, I keep catching myself too. I have not said it right the first time yet, but yeah, my new name is Megan McGuire. But yeah, I look forward to talking all things end of the year, new year stuff since we're coming up in December. I think we've got a lot of good content to talk about today, student loans and financial planning wise.
Yeah. You guys are probably tired of us, of hearing us say there's been a lot of changes lately we want to update you on, but yeah. Aren't you grateful that you have someone who's excited about updating you on these changes and keeping you up to date? So,
right. I know we do kind of sound like a broken record, but it's not our fault.
Totally not our fault. We love you all. And we want this to all be a nice, stable, clean environment. And I think that's coming very soon for all of us.
Yeah. So we'll definitely talk about towards the end of today's episode, how to take advantage of some of the uncertainty and what new changes could mean for your plan and how to pivot when those new changes come about or they're enacted. We wanted to start today with some end of the year things to consider, financial planning wise, student loan wise. Since we're in December, I can't believe it, but we're coming up on 2023 real fast. So let's talk about some investment end of the year things to consider or investment account things to consider. I'll throw that to you, Lauren.
Yeah, I think one of the first things that comes to mind is the Roth. So many people are like, woohoo, I've got a Roth IRA, and they're just so excited they're contributing. But we also have a lot of clients that we do consults with that are eligible to do the backdoor Roth. And when I say eligible, it's almost like you have to if you want to contribute to Roth. And that's because your income is above a certain level. So for 2022, if you made more than $140,000, actually $144,000 as a single individual, or higher than $208,000. Is that the right number? No, 214.
Yeah, 214.
Yeah, 214 as a married couple, then you are going to need to be doing the backdoor Roth. So why we bring this up is that sometimes people don't realize their income has increased over the course of the year. They've been making their regular monthly contributions to their Roth, and they're actually going to end up in a situation where they should have done the backdoor Roth. Or maybe they just didn't know this existed at all, and they were just throwing money in, because nobody stops you from putting money in. You can do it whenever you want, but there are actually rules, and you can totally mess up your tax situation if you don't do this right.
You'll get a nasty gram in the mail from the IRS that says, hey, you weren't supposed to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA, so you've got to take all that money out, which is not a fun letter to get. So now is a very proactive month that you could take a look at your income situation, confirm, you know, where are you falling? Are you really close to that limit? If you are, it might make sense just to do the backdoor proactively or cautionarily. Is that a word? Cautionarily? Yeah, safely?
Sounds good to me.
So again, those limits for filing jointly, you and your spouse's modified adjusted gross income. So maybe think about AGI. So your gross minus what you are able to deduct pre-tax, like 401k, 403b, HSA, those things that work for you both. Your income needs to be lower than $214,000. Now, if it's lower than $204,000, then you can contribute up to the limit for the Roth IRA. But if it's between 204 and 214, there's a reduced amount that you're able to contribute. So that's where you start getting into the tricky zone where you're phasing yourself out of being able to contribute because of your income. And if you're over 214, there's not an ability to contribute. You would have to take that out in the future once they realize you made too much money. And then the single numbers, again, if you are single, that has to be less than $144,000. It does phase out between $129,000 to $144,000. So there would be a reduced amount that you're able to contribute between those income levels. If you're under $129,000, you're in the clear for single head of household or married filing separately. That's another topic. So we can spin to that next.
That is another key thing that is always we have to point out during our consultations is sometimes your strategy for student loan purposes is to do married filing separately, or sometimes you're doing it for other reasons. But when you do married filing separately, you cannot just do a regular contribution to a Roth, regardless of what your income is. You have to do the backdoor Roth strategy. And this is so commonly missed that we thought it was important to bring that up yet again. If you do married filing separately, backdoor Roth is your only way. So if you've been doing it wrong for a few years, you definitely want to get an accountant involved. We're going to talk some tax stuff later, but accountant is worth their weight in gold to figure this all out and untangle it for you so that you can get everything back on the up and up.
Yep. And we do have a lot of folks that will be considering filing separately because they are looking to keep their payment off of just their own income, being on an income-driven plan going towards forgiveness. So this is very relevant for a lot of our listeners. So if you're filing taxes separately, or if you plan to file separately for 2022, if you've already contributed to a Roth IRA, you do need to take some steps in December to potentially correct that. And so we'll talk a little bit about those steps. So let's say you were to contribute to a Roth IRA this year, but either you're over the income threshold or you're filing taxes separately. What would you need to do, Lauren, if you already contributed? What would you need to do before the end of the year?
So you would need to, like you said, get those contributions back out of your Roth IRA and any earnings. So because this year has been a little bit wonky in the market as well,
there may
not be any earnings to worry about in that regard, but you would need to calculate, like you said, what any earnings are. And then, like I said, it could further get complicated if you made IRA contributions as well, or anything like that. So you want to make sure that you get exactly at what you took out and then any additional earnings. And then you want to contribute instead to a traditional IRA, which would be a non-deductible contribution. So you're not getting, a traditional IRA usually gives you tax benefits. It's a pre-tax account, but you're not getting those tax benefits because you're making a non-deductible contribution to it. And then you're moving that non-deductible contribution over to your Roth IRA. So it's kind of a lot.
Yep. And time would be of the essence. So I'm glad this is coming out in December. So if you're someone who needs to look at this, so you would need to contact your custodian. So the company that holds your Roth IRA, your IRA. So that could be like Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab. Those are some of the big jumbo ones out there. You would need to contact them and ask them to reclassify your 2022 contributions from Roth to traditional IRA. So this is something that they can do over the phone with you. And basically what that means is they take what you contributed to Roth and they reclassify it under that IRA bucket instead. Once the reclassification is complete, you would want to contact the custodian again. So sometimes that takes a day, a couple of days or so. The representative would be able to tell you how long it might take to get moved over. But once that reclassification is complete, you'd want to contact your custodian again and then convert the non-deductible IRA into your Roth IRA. So this might sound silly. And I tell folks this all the time when we have our meetings. I'm like, I know this sounds like annoyingly too many steps, but this is how to stay kosher with the IRS if you're filing separately or if you're over that income threshold. So these steps are important because at tax time, what's going to happen is you're going to need to complete Form 8606. So this is something you or your CPA would need to complete to report those non-deductible contributions to the IRS. So they know that you didn't make actual contributions to the Roth, you converted into the Roth. And so that would be how you can fix it for this year. You need to do this by the end of the year. So this is December, so you need to have this done ideally by the end of the year. If you're after the end of the year, does that hurt you? This would be more of a question for the CPA. We always recommend, hey, get this done by the end of the year to avoid any negative repercussions. This will help get you all kosher with the IRS for contributing to the Roth IRA. Now, in the future, if you want to contribute to the Roth IRA and you know you're going to be filing separate or you know you're going to be over the income threshold, instead of doing what you maybe had done this year and contributing directly to the Roth first and then converting, What you would want to do is contribute directly to the IRA. So you would have to have two separate accounts for all of this. We need a Roth IRA and an IRA open. So if you want to do this going forward, you contribute to the IRA and then convert into the Roth by the end of the year. You could do that each time you contribute, or you, if you do a lump sum, you could do it after the lump sum. But these would be some steps to take if you're in this bucket where maybe you contributed to the Roth IRA and you shouldn't have this year.
Yeah. So one last thing about the Roth. I know you guys are like, oh my goodness. Hopefully you are one of the people that's done it right. And this is just like a little reminder for you or something you're learning so that you can tell a friend or that you don't mess it up in the future. But one other piece of the puzzle about the Roth IRA or the backdoor Roth IRA specifically is that you can't have outstanding pre-tax accounts. So if you have like a SEP IRA or a traditional IRA, you're going to be subject to what we call the pro rata rule. And so it's going to be complicate your life further. You're not making a normal Roth backdoor Roth contribution. You want to do something with those accounts. So yet another reason, instead of spending another 20 minutes explaining, but if you have pre-tax accounts other than your 401k, it's going to affect your backdoor Roth IRA. And it's called the pro rata rule that you need to look into further to see how it is going to affect you. And you may want to get rid of that SEP IRA or that traditional IRA if you can, you know, depending on what your strategy is. Obviously, it's personal for every person, but just be mindful of that.
So definitely, if this is something that affects you, reach out to a CPA. One of the groups that we commonly refer folks to is called Student Loan Tax Experts. They are great. They fully understand how and why people would be filing taxes separately for student loan purposes and the complications that that can have with the rest of your finances. So very helpful. And then another just note is, you know, if you're someone who's thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how complicated this would be with the Roth IRA, but I've heard it's such a great bucket to contribute to. Another like option to not, you know, if you have some room in your Roth 401k, for example, through work, maybe an easier solution is just to increase contributions to your Roth 401k through your employer. Because if you're filing separately, 401k, 403b, it's okay. It doesn't matter. It's only the IRAs that are affected by your marital status or tax filing status, I should say. So I always tell folks that too, to where like, hey, if this is just a lot of steps, you want to kind of avoid this, the easier route, if you have room to contribute more to your employer accounts, would just be to contribute to Roth there if you have access. So that's another option to keep in mind.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point, you know, as we talk about end of the year, maxing out your 401k is definitely a must do if you can make it happen before the end of the year. So sometimes it's year end bonuses. You need to adjust or ask them to take additional contributions out from your bonus so that you can get to the maximum. And so to be clear, you know, at the end of 2022, we're in, it's $20,500. So sometimes people get confused about the word match versus max. Maximum that you can put in as an employee is $20,500 is actually going up to $22,000 next year. So you're going to be able to put more away. You might need to adjust your contributions. Good time to do that too. But matching is what your employer does. And some people get so hung up on what's happening or not happening via the match that they forget that they need to be doing the max so that they can actually get to their retirement goals.
Yep. That's a great point. I do get that a lot in my consultations where I'll ask, hey, so how much are you contributing to your 401k? And they'll say, oh, I'm doing the match. And I'm like, okay, but how much is that? Is that 5%, 6%? It's like, oh, well, it's the max I can put in. I'm like, nope, there's a difference. There's definitely a difference, but the match is absolutely important. Always strive for the match because that's free money that you get from your employer to retirement. But the max this year, 20,500, next year, exciting. It's going up to 22,500. So that'll be for 2023. So like you said, Lauren, maybe look at your percentage that you have coming out from your paycheck to make sure that you're on target to max out next year, if that's something that you're able to do. Now, 401k, maybe one other note on here is just it does have to be through employer paycheck deduction if you're employed. So it's not something where you could just take a lump sum and dump into your 401k unless you're a business owner. And that's something that you have access to with like a solo 401k, for example. But if you're an employee, it does have to be payroll deduction. So if you are not at the point of maxing out for 2022, and you could tell you need to bump it up, you only have maybe one or two paychecks to be able to do that. So I would definitely take a look at it if that's important to you to do for this year.
Absolutely. And as we talk about maxing, we should also be thinking about other things that we can max. So your HSA is another. Might be too late in the year to make these adjustments. Sometimes it takes one or two paychecks for the actual adjustments that you make to kick in. But these are also, it's open enrollment time for a lot of people. So these are things you want to be thinking about for next year. You got a raise during the course of the year. You know, it's best that when you get a raise, you redirect that money to savings and you keep trying to live the same lifestyle that you were previously living. So if a HSA is something you heard of or you're just now hearing about via the podcast, it is a health savings account. You can put as a family, I think up to 7,000. Do you know the updated 2022 numbers?
Individual, it was 3650. So that times two for a family. I think it's going up to 3850. So that times two for a family, I believe.
We're not doing the math. You guys got to get your calculators out. So,
yep.
But it's another cool way to save money on your student loans because it is a pre-tax benefit. So you put this 7,000, I'm just going to call it 7,000 plus into this account for your family. You use it for healthcare expenses. When they come up, you do have a high deductible health plan now. So you're going to have more out-of-pocket expenses when you go to the doctor, but that's $7,000 on paper that you didn't make. And so that's $7,000 that you don't have to pay taxes on. So that's really, really cool. And also it lowers your adjusted gross income. So if you're on one of our income-driven repayment plans, that makes a lower student loan payment for you. So definitely want to be thinking about your HSA, what you're going to contribute in 2023 as we round out this year.
Yep. An HSA is different than FSA. So an FSA, it is a use it or lose it benefit. So HSAs are great because you can contribute. But if you don't need to use that money, it rolls over indefinitely. You always have it in that bucket for yourself to use in the future for healthcare expenses. FSA, it has a lower limit on how much you can contribute, and it is a use it or lose it benefit. So if you don't use it, you unfortunately lose the ability to use it next year. HSAs are great. They're a unicorn kind of bucket, and it's money that's never taxed as long as you're using it for eligible or qualifying healthcare expenses. FSAs are similar in that way, but you lose it if you're not using it. So that's something to keep in mind. And these are the questions we get off oftentimes. You know, how can I reduce my AGI for my income-driven payment? How can I reduce what my income looks like? And these are the main ways to do so that you have control over. So contributing more to 401k, 403b, 401a, all the fours, if you have access to those, and then maxing out or contributing to HSA, FSA, if that's something that you know you'll use over the course of the year. So those are the main ways that you can control your AGI by contributing more to these buckets without making less. And I always tell folks, it is never something you should be striving for to make less income. Never. So I know income-driven payments are, of course, based off of your income. So of course, you want those payments to be as low as possible. But if you get a bonus or if you get a pay raise, you know, coming up, don't be upset about it because it may slightly increase your payment in the future. But that also means you have a lot more income coming into the household that you could do other productive things with. So I always like to mention that because it's kind of funny how like people get upset about bonuses or like pay raises now.
Right. We laugh, but we've definitely seen it and yeah. More than once, you know, where somebody's just like, I'm just not going to make any money. Like, who cares? Like, I just rather pay very little toward these loans and just make as little as possible. It's like, no, that doesn't help you with your overall financial goals.
Right.
Like,
think about the bigger picture.
Yes. They say more money, more problems, you know, slightly true from a tax perspective, but more money, more opportunity. That's what we need yes. to be focusing on.
Absolutely.
We all absolutely want to pay Uncle Sam as little as possible. And, you know, like I said, strategies are the key piece of the puzzle. One of the strategies is not lower income. So as we kind of think about that, how to pay Uncle Sam less, let's talk some about a little bit more about tax stuff for the end of the year. What are you thinking as people get ready for tax season and this year rounds out, Megan?
Yeah. So we are in an interesting time still because we're still in the COVID forbearance, the payment freeze with student loans. That has been extended until possibly as far as September 2023, depending on what happens with the court and what happens with the one-time cancellation coming up, because it's 60 days after they're able to implement, the Department of Ed is able to provide the one-time cancellation relief, or 60 days after June 30th, whichever comes first. So the latest we could have payments kicking in, it sounds like, would be September 1, because it would go all the way to August 30th. So what does that mean? Well, what we think it means is it's possible that this could push back your income recertification dates, because every payment extension they've done to date, and it's been almost 3 years of payment extensions so far, but every extension they've also postponed or pushed the income recertification date when someone would have to update their income-driven plan. And that's significant because when you update your income for the income-driven plan, the application links back to your most recently filed tax return. And that's been interesting over the past couple of years, right, Lauren?
Very interesting. We're all the way back in 2019 with tax returns. There's a few people that have like a weird situation where they're even like 2018 tax return that's being used and we're in 2022.
Yeah. So if you don't have the need to update income, and no one does. No one does definitely before July 1st, 2023. That's already their guidance right now. So let's say payments kick in April. Your payment would be what it was pre-COVID based off of probably 2018 or 2019's tax return, unless you made changes to your plan by either consolidating or updating your income beforehand. So this is interesting because it's created some interesting tax conversations, because people do file taxes separately to keep their payments off of their own income for forgiveness purposes for income-driven plans. And, you know, we've been in this COVID forbearance for so long where we're looking back and we're saying, okay, well, we thought payments would kick in 2021. We thought payments would kick in 2022. So people made tax filing decisions for 2020 taxes, 2021. Now we're coming up on 2022. Based on thinking that maybe payments would be kicking in and that that tax return would be used. So what could people be thinking about for like 2020 or 2021 if they already filed separately?
They should be thinking about maybe amending back to filing joint. So if you're not going to need that tax return at all now, based on the time frame that Megan's just laid out, it's like, okay, it's safe for me to amend this return back to Mary filing jointly so that I can pick up whatever penalties or benefits I missed out on by filing separately. But you also need to be thinking about what strategy you're going to use for this 2022 return as we head into 2023. So, you know, to your point, if someone's filing or their recertification date is April of 2023, you're now kicked over to April of 2024 automatically. Well, April of 2024, they're probably going to be able to use your 2023 return, depending on when you get everything filed and taken care of for 2023. But it doesn't really matter your tax filing status for 2022, assuming that you can get your 2023 done prior to 2024, if you need to do, as an example, Mary filing separately. So it might be safe to file 2022 jointly, keep your life a little bit more simple. But, you know, you need to look into like, when exactly is my recertification date? And then you also need to watch, like I said, right now it's July, but they may even update it a little bit further out. And so that could benefit more people and allow them to do Mary filings jointly for 2022 and not maybe need to do their Mary filing separately again until 2023.
Yeah. So the dates, or maybe to kind of back up and talk about what the language says right now for recertification. So what studentaid.gov says right now is you won't be required to recertify before payments restart. And the earliest you could be required to recertify income is July 2023. You may see a recertification date that's earlier than July 2023 on your account aid summary. And they've said that they've been working on getting this pushed back. But if your recertification date falls between now and July 2023, it will be pushed out by 1 year. You had a great example earlier. If your account says your recertification date is April 2023, it's going to be pushed to April 2024. How can you tell what your recertification date is? So what I would do is go to your studentaid.gov account, log in, and there's going to be, you'll see your loan details listed, and you'll click on view details, and then it'll list out your individual loans where you can click view details again. And I think you have to click view details once more. So like just keep clicking view details and it'll show up with your anniversary. And so your anniversary date may or may not be accurate right now. If it's still showing something like 2022, know that it's been pushed a year. If it's showing up as sometime before July 2023, know that it's been pushed a year. So this can help give you an idea of when are you going to be required to update your income and what decisions do I need to make when it comes to filing taxes with my spouse for 2022. Tax filing deadlines are typically April 15th. You can extend tax filings if that's something that's required or, you know, something that you need to do for tax purposes, or if you wanted to strategically do that for student loan purposes, you could all the way until October of that same year. So sometimes that's a strategy as well. If you owe taxes, you have to pay by April 15th, but that's also like a planning strategy we talk about too. We talk about, okay, well, based on when your anniversary is, what tax return would that be linking back to? And then we work backwards to find out, okay, well, should we extend that return? Does it make sense to just go ahead and file that return jointly or separately? So these are some of the questions that I think it's good to talk about this now because we're coming up on tax time and it's never good to do things last minute because that's when panic starts to come in. So I think start having these conversations now with your CPA or with your spouse. Start running the numbers now, or if you want to do a consultation with us to help strategize with this, that's of course our, you know, our forte strategy with student loans. That's our bread and butter. Then we can work that out and figure out what the next steps would be. But anything to add to that before we move on?
No, I think you thoroughly nailed it. The one thing I'll say is like, don't wait till the last minute. So a lot of people are like, oh, it's April the 12th. I need a consultation tomorrow to figure out if I should do joint or separate. You've got plenty of time. Like you said, starting right now, we can see via your TXT file. So that's a file that we ask you for when we do our consultation, you know, when your recertification date is. We can already have that strategy as part of your student loan consultation and part of your student loan plan overall, so that you know what to do when it's time for you to file your taxes. Don't wait to the last minute. You'll know that one thing. Even if you wait to the last minute to file your taxes, you won't have to call us at the last minute. And we do. We book up. We book out. And everybody's like, please, Lauren, fit me in. Find a spot for me. Like, yeah. This is a great time of the year to be doing it. You know, it's kind of quiet because of the extension. Like, if you want to be the good person that's getting everything done proactively, like, jump on the calendar now, not April.
Yep. Yeah. And your CPAs will appreciate it too, because they also get like a really big rush, like coming up on tax time. And if you're reaching out to a CPA for the first time, like April 10th, you've got to understand that they are not going to be able to help you at that point.
Yeah, they're going to help you file an extension and get to you later. That's what's going to happen.
Exactly. So being proactive on this stuff is important. And by the time, I think very soon that guidance could be updated. So we know like when they might push July 1st, 2023 to, like maybe they push it a couple more months or maybe 6 months. I think we'll know that here soon, but we could still have very good proactive conversations about it now. So you know how to pivot once these changes come into play. And I do want to circle back to a great point you had made earlier about amending tax returns, because we did a lot of our consultations. We were recommending, hey, it looks like filing separately is going to make the most sense for 2020 or 2021, because we were all under the impression that payments would start back up. And that would have been the right decision if payments did. But here we are. So if you're in that boat where you did file separately for 2020 or 2021, and maybe there was a pretty big tax loss, like savings loss for doing so, you can always amend separate returns to joint. You can't do the reverse. So you can't amend from joint to separate. So if you are in that boat where you filed separately, maybe you lost out on some tax savings, you can go back and amend that return now, which you'll probably need the help of a CPA to do, but that could recoup some of that lost tax savings and that you could, you know, roll that into what you might have to pay extra in taxes for this upcoming year if you're doing separate for 2022.
I know. There is a lot of uncertainty and you're just like, oh my goodness. Like I said, it is not our fault. We just want to educate you on these things.
I know.
There's so many cool ways to be able to take advantage of this uncertainty. So we definitely want to keep it on a positive note and keep saying like, okay, what's the new strategy related to my specific plan that I need to be taking advantage of? Because there are many things that are good about the changes that are happening in this system, despite us all feeling a little bit uneasy. Like you said, one day to the next, we wake up at Student Loan Planner. We're like, oh my goodness, what are they going to say today?
What's on the news today? Yeah, exactly.
Right. So we feel you 100%, but we're also really excited about the way they're going to clean up the system. We're optimistic that it's going to be really clear and concise once they get done with all these different updates and that people won't have to be playing these guessing games going forward. So let's talk a little bit about how to take advantage of some of the other uncertainties in the system, Megan.
Yep. So let's talk about some of the big things that we know are true now and what could be coming down the pipeline. So one of the things is payments and interest have been extended again. We were just talking about that. So we have 0% interest for longer. We don't know exactly for how long, but this is a good opportunity for all people who have federal student loans in the sense of if you are someone who's going towards forgiveness, you're going to be getting free credit towards that forgiveness timeline. If you're someone who's planning on paying the loans off, you are getting 0% interest right now. So your dollars are going a lot further if you're paying towards your loans. Or Sim had a great recommendation or thought in our last podcast episode about putting that money, like what you would be paying towards your loans, in a high yield savings account right now, because high yield savings accounts are at 3% or more, which is awesome. We were there before COVID. Those really took a nosedive with their interest rates, you know, during the COVID pandemic time, but now they're back up. So now they're closer to 3%. So if you're someone who's trying to pay your loans off, maybe a strategy would be to put what you're planning on paying towards the loans in that high yield savings account for now, have that grow at 3%, which is, you know, earning you money, maybe not a lot, but it is earning you money compared to just putting it down on the student loan balance that's not costing you anything right now. So you'll have a little bit more that you can throw towards the balance when payments do kick back in. I've been telling folks this who are a clear refinance case, but the 0% interest period, I think, is also a good timing thing. And what I mean by that is interest rates for refinancing are not great right now. We're still seeing like 6-ish. It's all completely dependent on credit, of course, but the environment as a whole, interest rates are a lot higher than what we were seeing 6 months, 12 months ago. So now isn't an ideal time to be refinancing unless you have private student loans already and you can get a lower interest rate than those. But if you have federal loans, ride out the 0% for now and put money towards the high yield savings account like we just talked about. And then hopefully by the time payments are kicking back in, maybe the interest rate environment has chilled out a little bit and it's a better time to refinance at that time as a whole.
Yeah, the one thing I'll add to that is if you've got a lot of cash sitting around, you know, you've got a fully funded emergency fund and you've been setting aside your student loan payments maybe already for 6, 8, 12. I mean, it's been 3 years. Maybe you've piled up all of those payments, you know, waiting to make a big lump sum once the 0% runs out or something like that. Is I-bonds is another cool way to be able to participate in the market right now. And so you can go and purchase I-bonds. And I think they're at like 6.5%, right? It's like crazy. So high yield savings accounts are awesome. They're really easy. I-bonds are a little bit more clunky, the setup, and it's, you know, a government website that you use to do it. But definitely look into the I-bonds as well, because like you said, that's a great way to be able to kind of put your money to work in a nice, safe way during this kind of crazy environment and this period of uncertainty.
Yeah, I think this is also another really unique opportunity to, I say, practice payments or practice saving for the tax implication. So if you're someone who's going towards the taxable loan forgiveness in the future, that you're going to have that tax bomb later on, 20, 25 years from now, then now is a great time to start practicing that in your budget, because we do put that into our planning when we have consultations with folks. We plan out how much you should be saving ideally to prepare yourself for that potential tax bomb in the future. I'm hoping every consultation we've ever had does exactly what we tell them to do.
But, of course, they all do 100% of it, Megan. Duh.
Exactly. But if you haven't started that yet, now is still a great time to do that because we don't have payments kicking in yet. Start practicing with how much you need to be saving for that tax implication, setting up that account. Just taking action is the thing to do because I think we could also procrastinate. And I think it's easy to just open that account, start putting that savings into it, start getting the wheel turning. Like the momentum will get there. It feels like an uphill battle right now with how much you might need to save for the tax implication, but starting somewhere is important. And now could be a great time to start and get that going.
Yes, it is a great point because we're going to see a lot of sad faces the day student loan payments kick back in after almost 3 years of not having to make one. But it'll make the blow a lot less painful if you've already had that money outside of your budget and you haven't increased your lifestyle and started spending your student loan money. So, you know, I know the holidays are coming up and you might want to do a little something fun there, but you definitely want to start creating good habits as well. And we're, you know, like I said, turning the corner into New Year's resolutions and things like that. So no time like the present to start setting aside something. And we even recommend people do this like when they're saving up for like a home down payment or something like that, or, you know, your mortgage is probably going to be higher. So start paying your mortgage into your savings account as well to get used to seeing like, this is money I don't have available to me on a monthly basis.
Yep. Yeah, it is definitely a habit building activity that we're talking about here. But also, of course, it's going to benefit you by being prepared for what you're saving for.
Yeah, I think the memes are going to be great. Like, I'm just waiting for all the memes that are going to come out the day student loan payments kick back in. All the sad faces.
I know. So get used to not having it. Have it go towards something productive. We didn't mention this yet, but definitely prioritize paying off other higher interest debts. Like you mentioned, we are going into the holidays. Sometimes that typically means people spend a little more than they usually do, which could put them in a position where they're paying down credit card debt. So absolutely pay down higher interest debts. That is a priority. And then implement some of these saving strategies that we're talking about.
Amen.
Awesome. Well, good. So we talked about how to maybe take advantage of some of the uncertainty with the 0% interest, that when payments start back up. Some other things that are uncertain at this time are whether or not that $10,000 or $20,000 of cancellation is going to come through. So what would you suggest to folks that are maybe waiting on that for now?
Yeah, I would say similar bucket as what we were just discussing is like continue to set aside funds in case there is no cancellation. I'm assuming that a cancellation would have wiped out your student loan debt in its totality. I know there's a lot of people that would have been eligible for that. You're probably in a situation, there's a high likelihood that you make more than 10 or 20K and that, you know, there was no forgiveness or anything coming your direction, like taxable forgiveness, if this cancellation didn't come along. And so you want to keep setting the funds aside to be prepared to, you know, just wipe out your own debt if the government doesn't come with their cape and sweep it out of the way for you. Because you do ultimately want to be debt free and you want to get this off your plate so you can start focusing on some of your other financial goals.
Yeah. So if you're someone who's stocking up savings for this, I think continue on, get up to that point where if this doesn't come through, you could just wipe it out at that point. If you're someone who's already made payments on the balance that could have potentially be wiped out in the future, you will get a refund for that. They've made that very clear. So if the cancellation does come through, you paid a portion of that $10,000 or $20,000 that you could have gotten canceled, you will get a refund back for that amount. So don't panic if you've already paid towards it. It will be something that you can get back.
Also, yeah, I'll say if they process your refund in the midst of this while we're still waiting, don't spend it.
Yeah.
Hold on to it because exactly. We don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
It's money you already gave away to them that you already kind of felt like you were paying down your debt with. Don't YOLO and pretend like you hit the lottery. Keep it to the side until we know exactly what's happening here.
Yeah. Reserve it. Put it in a savings account that you forget about, kind of. Don't totally forget about it, but don't be tempted by it. Great point there. Now, another big thing that we're optimistic about is the new proposed income-driven plan. So there's a lot of questions about this with what we're seeing in our, you know, social media accounts, what we're seeing in our emails from folks on how do I take advantage of this new plan or how do I set myself up to be eligible for this plan? So what would you say to that?
I'm going to toss this one to you, Megan, because you've been like really, really into this new plan. I'm thinking like when it's real, it'll be real and we'll have to address it. But like, we do absolutely want to be thinking about it. So I'm going to toss back over to you.
Sure. No, so I think you make a great point. And I say that every time someone asks me that question is this is just a proposal. We have no idea what this is actually going to look like in the future. It could be changed quite a bit before, because we have some ideas of what's been proposed, but that doesn't mean that those ideas are going to be what's actually put into place. So what I've been telling folks, I think you can kind of compartmentalize your loan situation and that can help you figure out how you should be thinking about this potential new plan. So if you're someone who's pursuing PSLF or the taxable loan forgiveness, this new proposed income-driven plan could be cheaper for you monthly. It sounds like it would be cheaper for pretty much everybody because it would make a portion of the balance, your undergraduate loans, a portion of that payment much cheaper, 5% instead of 10% repay or pay. And then it also has a higher poverty line deduction, which makes it, even if you don't have undergraduate loans, you just have graduate school loans across the board, it would still make your payment a little bit less. So maybe not a ton, but it does improve people's situation going towards the forgiveness in general, because the goal is to pay as little as possible. So that's about it for PSLF. I think that's the positive about this new plan with PSLF, folks. It may be making your payment cheaper. For those who are going towards taxable loan forgiveness, there's two big benefits. I think one is the lower payment, like we talked about for PSLF folks, but two is the benefit of not having interest grow on your balance. There would be a 100% subsidy of the unpaid interest, which just means that they waive 100% of the interest that is not paid. So that's significant for those going towards taxable loan forgiveness, because that balance oftentimes can grow with our existing plans today. If your balance is much greater than your income, your payment is likely never going to be enough to touch the principal. And that also means you're probably not paying off all the interest either. So your balance could be growing over time, which in our planning, you know, with the existing plans today, that sounds scary, like the balance growing, but it's okay because you're going towards loan forgiveness. So whatever is left over is then forgiven after that 20 or 25 years, but we have to pay taxes on it. So we plan for that. But the significance of the 100% subsidy for this new proposed income-driven plan is that the balance could be much, much lower than what it could be on repay or pay as we know it to be today. Because if there's no balance growth, then the balance that gets forgiven is potentially lower than what it could have been, which means your tax implication would be lower with a lower balance. Does that make sense how I explain that though?
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. The one thing I'll say too is like, you know, tax implication being lower. I know one of the other things we're speculating about is like whether there's going to be a tax liability at all in the future. If they're doing, you know, if this plan comes to fruition and the tax liability is lower, maybe that's kind of them posing or posturing to be able to keep the tax liability in place because now it's a much more affordable thing. You know, the one thing I would say that they're going to have to do if they do that is provide a way for people to be able to calculate what a potential tax liability looks like. And I think that's one of the biggest value adds we have as student loan planner is that we actually do that math for people because so many people have no idea how to calculate it, how much they should be saving, what to set aside. And so if this is something that the government wants you to have to like be on the hook for, they're going to also have to provide some sort of way for you to actually know in a meaningful way how I can save up and be ready for this, getting ready for the future. So I think that speaks to them maybe not, you know, having a tax liability eventually, or like you said, if this plan comes into play, then maybe it's one of those things where, okay, we made it more reasonable. And so therefore there is a tax liability. The other thing I was just going to say is like, you know, the one thing about this new plan is like I said, as a Virgo, don't deal in the, like the what if world well, but the one what if is like you said, obviously we're not telling people to refinance. There's just way too much uncertainty in this world right now. But if you have high income and this income driven waiver plays itself out, this lower income driven repayment plan could be helpful to people whose income has now been, you know, traditionally would be too high to participate in a taxable forgiveness plan, but they've gone through the IDR waiver and they got 18 years of credit. So they only got 5 or 6 more years to go. And now it's at this lower rate with this new plan. It now makes taxable forgiveness plausible for a lot of people that it wasn't previously going to be available to. And they've just been paying on their loans forever. So I'm really excited to see if the waiver comes through, the impact that that can have on a lot of people in addition to this plan. The two things together could help a lot of people get their loans taken care of a lot faster than they would have otherwise.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's kind of the third bucket I was thinking of, is the new income-driven plan could make forgiveness more applicable to more people. To maybe we weren't looking at someone for forgiveness previously because it seemingly their income was too high or their timeline would be too long. But with the combination of the IDR waiver and the new proposed income-driven plan, like maybe that puts you in a bucket for considering forgiveness when otherwise we wouldn't have. So I know that's a lot of like what ifs and there's a lot of uncertainty there, but I think this all boils down to, I think there are some positive things that could come about all of this uncertainty. I don't think it's going to put anybody in a worse position. And it does create more planning opportunity to where we could pivot in the future, depending on what comes through. These are some of the ideas to have in your mind about how you might be pivoting your plan. Like it might be you switching to this new income-driven plan, or maybe it's having a conversation with us about, you know, hey, I thought I was going to be on the refinance path after this 0% stuff was waived, but now with this new plan, like, should I be considering forgiveness? So, I mean, it could certainly have you pivot your plan in a positive way. And the tax bomb elimination. So that's such a like interesting topic. Like that could be really impactful for people. Like if that tax implication was gone in the future, we of course still plan as if it is going to exist. I think we plan for worst case scenario. So definitely don't stop saving for it. If you've already, we already talked about that on like the last point. So keep saving for it. But if that tax implication is eliminated in the future, that could be really positive. It could also make forgiveness more attractive to more people mathematically. And I tell folks, I joke too, like if they eliminate this tax implication, we're going to have everyone who had saved for it donate like a couple hundred bucks to a big blowout party. And we'll have a great time celebrating that big win for folks.
Right.
Maybe we'll go city to city.
I love this as a plan. Like, look what student loan planner helped me retire a year earlier. Take my kids to Disneyland. Just a couple hundred bucks of your part. Like, help us have a really good time.
Yep. So I think, you know, positive things to come. I think we know the general direction, but do we know exactly how this is going to play out? No. But I think there's some things that we can keep our foot in the door for and things that we can maybe consider pivoting to in the future that are better than what we know our plan to look like today. So I'm excited about that. And I think people can be optimistic about that. And if you've worked with us, like we have an efficient plan, a great plan for you now. So that's great for now, but it could get better. So if it does get better, that's a win for you, for your family. So to be determined, we'll continue to see what all this looks like in the future.
Yeah. So as we head into the end of the year and look forward to 2023, I think the key point that I want you all to take away today is it is time to take action, whether that is in your investments, whether that is in your student loans. You know, a lot of people are thinking like, oh, the uncertainty, I haven't done anything because nothing's been happening in this system for the last 3 years. And you've kind of, you know, made it work because nothing's been happening, but you absolutely can be taking action now to get more clear on your student loan plan. There's tons of things that you can learn and understand about your specific plan outside of, you know, what we shared today so that you can be ready whenever things do jump back into action, because I can guarantee you what's going to happen. Everybody's going to wait till right before it's time to repay. They're like, oh my God, I need a student loan plan. Now I need to know what to do. We can absolutely help you know what to do right now. And you get 1 year of email support. So even though there are some things that are still uncertain, we're happy to help you sort through those uncertain things that may further affect your plan if we create one for you today. But there are definitely action items that you can take to be clearer on your personal situation. So do not wait. Do not delay. Let's finish the year on a good note and let's start 2023 on an even better note.
Yes, I love it. I like the call to action. Well, good. Well, it is always a pleasure doing a podcast episode with you. I think this was a lot of fun. Hopefully it gave you, anyone listening, a nugget of some kind of information to go and apply to your situation. And we will see you on the next one.
Happy holidays.